I'm Katie Kempner, and welcome to Perspectives, which is a series of inspiring conversations with remarkable working women. And today I am really excited to be talking with Elaine Lowe, who is a staff writer at The Inkler. Elaine, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
So before we dive into talking about The Inkler, could we start by just hearing a little bit about how you got to your current position?
Sure. So I've been in proper newsrooms for the past decade or so. My first real newsroom job was at Investors Business Daily, where I covered quarterly earnings, you know, did a lot of coverage of the retail and media beats and a little bit of personal finance. And, you know, went in there not even knowing what time the stock market opened and then came out really having a fuller understanding of, you know, how to read a company's balance sheet, how to look at a quarterly earnings story, how to look at market trends. And I was there for almost 5 years before heading over to Variety, where I covered the entertainment industry, mainly TV, for about 2.5 years. Then was at Business Insider for a little bit. And for the past year have been at The Inkler, still covering the entertainment business.
So tell us about The Inkler for those that might not be familiar with it yet.
Sure. So we cover the ins and outs of the entertainment business. We're very well read by a lot of C-suite executives, a lot of showrunners, producers, people in the industry who really want to get a sense for what's happening. And, you know, we do big picture sort of 30,000 foot view stories. I have a weekly newsletter called Series Business, which takes a granular look at the TV industry and the people working in it. And we cover everything from, you know, what kind of shows are being bought and sold on the TV marketplace to the current crew negotiations that are coming up. And then, of course, The Inkler himself, Richard Rushfield, has, you know, a wonderful series of columns that I think everybody should read because he's just very entertaining and highly knowledgeable about the industry.
So what is it? And I mean, it interests me quite a bit. For you, what is it about the entertainment and media industry that really interests you?
Well, there's the consumer part of it, right? Like any of us who watch TV or movies, it's always interesting to see how the magic happens behind the scenes and learn more about that. But, you know, it's also a business. It's one of those industries where the intersection of art and commerce are just fascinating to dissect because, I mean, it's like you look at the strikes that happened last year where you had thousands of writers and actors going on strike. And I think it really sort of laid bare the tension too between like wanting to create art for art's sake, but also making sure that it's an industry where there's a sustainable wage and that it can be profitable for everybody. So I think it just brings together a really interesting series of those elements.
Just to talk about the strike for a minute, I mean, AI was such a big part of that, right?
Cheating
around AI. Where do you think AI is fitting into the industry now?
It's already here. When we look at the way these fast moving technologies work, I mean, you look at sort of the advancements that you've seen in CGI or some of these other very, software computer driven technologies. And when you look at AI now and the speed at with which it's moving, it causes a lot of alarm. It also creates some opportunities. And the industry is really sort of figuring out how to coexist alongside this in a way where, again, it's still a sustainable industry for the artists who work in this town, but also maybe being able to take advantage of some of the useful parts of AI.
That's an excellent point. You know, one of the things I wanted to ask you about when you were at Insider, you focused on how the pandemic's economic impact on young industry workers may have produced sort of a lost generation of Hollywood creatives. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. I mean, gosh, I think we're still seeing the ripple impact of the pandemic on the industry on everybody, right? I mean, it's like you look where it's 2024, we're 4 years out now from when the pandemic started. And, you know, that's almost half a decade out from that. And so you look at the young people, you look at the college grads who were maybe at the start of 2020 looking to get into the business. Who wanted to be a writer's assistant or a production assistant on set. And those opportunities were very limited. Obviously, when, you know, everybody had to understandably stop doing what they were doing while we all figured out how to acclimate to the circumstances around us. you know, it was a public health crisis. But, you know, coming out of it, it's really been tough because there was a glut of production after the first year of the pandemic when, you know, the machine came whirring back to life. You know, and with it came some opportunities to be on set, but also it just really changed the way people work. You know, whether or not you were on a set or in a writer's room or in an office at a studio, you know, I talked to the assistant of a very senior level studio executive last year. And I remember asking her like, okay, you're like 23. Like, what's it like coming out of college and being plopped into this post-pandemic work environment? Like, and she was like, well, you know, it was remote. Like I started remote and it was sort of interesting trying to figure out like who to even talk to. But going back into an office was really a helpful way for her to learn the ropes again. It's unfortunate because culture wise, you know, there's sort of missing out on that communal experience of being at work and being able to learn by osmosis. You know, how things are done. But opportunity wise, it's also been tough because obviously the pandemic had such a financial impact on so many people that it really created a greater barrier to entry for a young person hoping to just, you know, move to LA, that sort of classic story of like, you know, getting off of the bus from Ohio or whatever and landing in LA and trying to find work that way. I mean, that has radically changed as well.
I mean, really what the point you're making is true across all industries or many industries, especially those that have office settings, because mm-hmm. when you look at younger people that missed out on time in offices or missed out mm-hmm. on time of relating to people in real life, they mm-hmm. seem to really not be as advanced as other people would be at the same age, or not sure about even just like the social way to act in specific situations because they're not used to it.
Yeah, I've definitely heard a lot of stories around that. And you know, at the same time, there's also been a lot more accessibility created by remote environments. You know, I'd spoken to people who, you know, as young writers, somebody living in Atlanta previously wouldn't have been able to get a job in a writer's room in LA because all of that would have happened in person. But right. This person actually wound up getting staffed on a TV show all the way over from Atlanta. And so, you know, again, with everything, there are upsides and downsides. So there was sort of the idea that, okay, we can make this more accessible, especially for a city like LA that has an enormous cost of living, to sort of be able to create that opportunity for somebody who can't afford to live here, you know, is definitely an upside. But yeah, I think we're going to see the way this ripples out for years to come.
So before we move on from talking about entertainment, just, you know, we talked about how much it's changing. So what are some of the things that you're most excited about? And that could be anything from trends to actual shows, or what's exciting you right now?
Oh, gosh, that's interesting. I mean, I think just seeing the way the industry is getting back on its feet after the pandemic and after the dual strikes that we saw last year, and there's this new normal that I think nobody really knows exactly what it's going to look like yet. I think there's the common wisdom is that the TV industry, the film industry, you know, things are going to be smaller, especially on the TV side. We had 600 TV shows, 600 scripted TV shows. That's not even including reality shows and things on the air last year. And, you know, that's not an environment that anyone thinks we're going to return to. But what does that mean then for people who are working in the business? That means there are going to be fewer shows, which means there will be fewer job opportunities. I mean, obviously, compared to, say, 10 or 15 years ago, the industry is still much, much larger than it used to be. But there's a sort of, I think the corporate term is right-sizing. The corporate euphemism for that, right, is sort of a right-sizing of the industry now that we're coming out of this period where there was a real glut of production, you know, coming out of the pandemic and coming as many of these large companies were building out streaming services and there were like huge content pipelines to fill as they were trying to attract subscribers to these streaming services.
And, you know, it's interesting. I've been seeing so much on social media lately around all sorts of people, actors especially, but all sorts of people in supporting roles about how they're not making enough money, except for that very, very top echelon. Mm-hmm. They're not making enough money in this profession, even people that you wouldn't think for it to be sustainable.
Yeah, I mean, there's really just the top 1%, and the wealth disparity, you know, when it comes to talent is enormous. Or when you look at, you know, probably what your average senior studio executive makes versus what, you know, somebody who works on a set makes. I mean, there are enormous wealth disparities, I think, in any industry. But that's something that's been especially under the microscope this past year in light of all of the labor action that's been happening.
So another industry where you could say the same about that, the industry that you're in, media. I mean,
oh boy,
it's changed so much lately. And how challenging has it been for you as a writer to navigate those changes?
Oh, that's a whole podcast unto itself, Katie. Oh gosh. I mean, how has the newspaper and the journalism industry changed over the past 5-10 years? I mean, listen, when I was in college and I there was no like social media manager type thing. There was no like social media component of it. You know, there wasn't like a pivot to video. Like I basically went and I studied print journalism and less on the digital side. And now it's like the way a newspaper was when I graduated from college so many years ago versus now, it like the industry has completely changed. And unfortunately, you're just seeing so many layoffs and so many struggles among different newspapers and magazines to figure out a way to be profitable. And I mean, there are a lot of different industry forces at play here, but it's been tough for your average, you know, sort of mid-level reporter like me. It's been a real bummer to see so many incredibly talented people, you know, lose their jobs this year.
And it's a, you know, I ask about change for you personally and just overall, even going back to talking about AI, where we were talking about before in the conversation, there is so much change happening so quickly in a lot of industries. And it makes many people feel very unsettled whether they'll be needed for their job anymore. Or are there any things that you kind of have done on a personal level that keep you grounded?
Keep me grounded. I don't.
Are you grounded, Elaine? I don't know.
I try to be. I mean, listen, I'm just trying to work on drinking enough water and getting at least 7 hours of sleep a night. If that can be counted as trying to keep me grounded.
I think you should aim for 8, just a little FYI.
Well, yeah, we're working. It's a work in progress, baby steps. If I can get to 7 first, and with 2 kids under 10, it's a tough sell. but yeah, I mean, I when it comes to being grounded in this industry that I'm working in, I mean, that's a great question. I don't even know how to answer that one, Katie. I mean, I'm just trying to keep my head down and just keep working, you know?
Let me ask you a question, because you have a job that I would assume is quite proactive. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, whatever you're covering, you always have to be, well, I don't know how you spend your days, but I mean, I'm assuming it's a very proactive job. How do you keep yourself motivated to keep going? Is there any sort of secret juice you can share with us?
Well, the fun thing about journalism is you're working on a different story every day, every week, right? So there's always the novelty. There's always the newness of the new story you're chasing, of the new idea you have. So that really helps you get out of bed in the morning and really just chase the next thing.
So you mentioned you have 2 kids under 10. So that's a lot.
Yeah.
That was me a long time ago. But especially in this sort of new normal, so everything coming together where you're handling stuff with your kids and your work and your life, and it's all mixed together. Without using the word balance, although I personally like that word, juggling, whatever you want to say, how do you find specific ways that you're able to sort of do everything you need to do in a day? Or
Let me tell you, the phrase having it all has like been plaguing me for years now, right? Because I think that's, you know, sort of as a millennial of a certain vintage, like you kind of grew up with this messaging, right? Of like, you're a woman, you can have it all. You can have the great career and the family and everything. And you know, it's, I think there are, there's a lot more than just individual forces at play, right? Like when you're looking sort of institutionally, it's like, what would things that would be helpful to helping women succeed in the workplace. But on an individual level, it's like the best I can do is just sort of try to keep in mind that I don't have to be perfect on all counts. You know, it's like, I'm going to feel tired. And, you know, like sometimes like we'll have pizza on a Tuesday night. And like, that's just what we'll have to do. You know, if like one of my husband and I are too tired to cook or something, you know, or like, yeah, we'll have like a Trader Joe's frozen meal or something like that. So, yeah, I mean, there are those sort of those littler things that you do to figure out how to maintain work and family. And just, you know, I think it's also just a matter too of like making sure you're just always checking in with everybody and trying to be present. And I mean, I think personally, that's the thing that I've been thinking a lot about lately. It's like we, for those of us who have so many things that we're juggling in the air, it's just a matter of being like, okay, like I'm going to take 5 minutes and I'm going to like, you know, go do this thing that constitutes self-care or whatever. Or I'm going to take 5 minutes and I'm going to sit with my 9-year-old and like talk to him about his day. You know, it's about taking these little moments when you can get them.
That is terrific. That's so great of you to say, because I think you have it exactly right. And I have interviewed hundreds of women over the past decade while I have been doing Perspectives. And that conversation around having it all has changed so much. I can't even remember how many years ago now, because the pandemic sort of, you know, scrambled everybody's mind on time, or at least mine. But there was an article that came out in The Atlantic about whether women could have it all, and it sparked this big debate. And I think the question really has become and is, what does even having it all mean? And
right.
What does it mean to you now with younger kids? What will it mean when you get older? I actually think you can have it all, but not all at the same time. And you have to really understand what having it all means to you, because it will change throughout your life.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. Having it all isn't going to mean the same thing to everybody. And it can mean different things to the same person at different points in their lives, you know, like having it all might mean, yeah, that there is more of a 60-40 focus on work and, you know, building whatever part of your career that you're in right now. You know, or when you decide to have kids, suddenly that may shift from like 30 to 70 for a while. And it's like that, it's a balance that you constantly have to, I think, recalibrate that balance for yourself to figure out whether it's something that's satisfying for you. You know, and again, it's like, I won't get into it here, but it's like, I think, you know, when we think about having it all too, like think about the institutional forces at play when we're thinking about like the opportunities for paid maternity leave, or healthcare, or those sort of greater macro forces around, you know, what would really help families to have it all? Because, you know, we often center this conversation just on women, but it's like, what would really help the whole family unit to quote unquote have it all, you know, where, you know, the people in that unit have professional success and also time to spend with each other.
And joy. And get to experience joy, which in this crazy world is tricky to find and more important than ever.
Mm-hmm.
So on a less philosophical note, as a PR person by trade, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you, if people want to follow you or they want to reach out to you for a story idea, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Anyone can email me. I'm at elaine@theankler.com. That's Ankler is A-N-K-L-E-R. And, you know, feel free to read my newsletter, which is Theories Business, focusing on the TV industry. You can also reach me at Twitter at Elaine Lowe.
I believe that'd be X.
Oh, yes. The site formerly known as Twitter.
Elaine, you've given us such good nuggets of advice, but if I could just ask for one more before you go, do you have one piece of advice that has really helped you through your life and your career that you could share with us?
You know, my husband's best friend has this saying that I've relied on time and again, when both in professional and interpersonal situations, particularly around conflict. And it's be honest, but always take the high road. And I've always found that to just be really crucial. I mean, you know, as a communications professional yourself, you know, I wonder what you make of that. But it's like, sometimes it's best to just be very straightforward, but also to find kindness in being, you know, while you're being straightforward with somebody in order to get the message across.
I think that's a great way to end. And as a communications professional, I agree. So thank you. It was so nice to talk with you.
Thanks so much for having me.